You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
On this episode, I welcome Satish Kumar, who is the co-founder and CEO of Glider AI, a competency-based hiring platform. Through a total talent quality approach, he's committed to bringing quality and transparency in the talent market for enterprise, staffing agencies, and candidates. Satish is passionate about HR tech and ed tech. Satish is an ex-Oracle, a UC Berkeley alumni, and an IITK graduate. Please welcome Satish Kumar. Thank you so much for finding time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. Can you tell us a little bit more about Glider AI and what problem are you guys solving with your services?
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me on your podcast. So Glider.ai is a competency-based hiring platform, and we are all about democratizing the access to job opportunities to candidates. Someone said that talent is equally distributed, opportunity is not, and it is so true. And my emphasis is on that opportunity and access is not being available. So Glider sophisticated pre-hire screening, assessment, and interview solution removes the personal biases from the hiring practices and enables a data-driven decision-making process to hire candidates based on their competency and not degree or colleges, right? So especially in today's COVID-19 world, when things are going digital at a phenomenal speed, it is a lot more easier to provide access and tap the talent across various geographies. And Glider enables that remote hiring at a scale for enterprise. And you know, while I'm talking about access to opportunity, one related topic is diversity and inclusion, and it has to be part of the consideration and conversation for companies. So Glider has a specific built-in flow to support D&I initiatives for corporates. And company wants a consistent process across all job roles. Glider serves all type of job roles, be it technology, non-technology. In fact, we cater to 150 technologies and hundreds of non-tech functional roles. So Glider takes care of different use cases for hiring, let's say, full-time employee from colleges and experience category, as well as contingent labor across industry verticals like finance, technology, energy, semiconductor, etc. And for contingent labor, we have a built-in flow to manage the pipeline of vetted candidates through MSP and supplier. So with over a billion evaluations conducted on this robust platform, it is built for enterprise, and we are a multi-channel solution to assess candidate quality. We are a one-stop shop when it comes to talent quality for enterprise. So that is what we do.
That's exciting. And, you know, I'm glad we were able to finally connect, because it's not only personal interest of mine, but that's the field that, you know, we at ProSource IT, we operate in, as you may know. So that's very, you know, very relevant topic, at least, you know, for us, I'm sure for a lot of our listeners, because we utilize all kinds of different services for pre-screening, interviewing our candidates that we help our clients to source, find, and, you know, recruit. So that's, you know, that's very exciting. Just yesterday, I spent time with the CTO of IBM, and him and I were talking about this topic about transitioning from entrepreneurship going into corporate and vice versa, being a corporate and going into kind of that startup world. Him and I have that similar backgrounds that we've done both sides. I've left a stable corporate job, gone to my own startup, got out of that and got back to corporate. So him as well. So it's an interesting topic, and I wanted to get your take on that, because I know you've been part of, you know, enterprise, been part of large corporations, and you've gone on to found and start your company, Glider. Tell us a little bit more about any practical recommendations on how to succeed through such transition, because there's a lot of our listeners that are going through similar, you know, initiatives. What were some of the lessons learned, and what do you wish you knew ahead of time?
Definitely, definitely. It's a very interesting topic because it's very hard to make that transition, right? And having gone through it, I can definitely relate to what you're saying. So in this context, let me first say that share one regret that I wish I had jumped onto the entrepreneurial journey long back. It took me almost 9 years to make that shift. But you know what? It is never late though. So all out there who wants to do it, go ahead and do it. Now, coming back to your question, I think one of the big difference from corporate role to entrepreneurial is that a lot of things that you take for granted in the corporate life just disappear in your entrepreneurial journey. In the earliest stage, you can assume that you would have to deal with almost every aspect of the company operation. And all things add up and you know you will see a slow progress. It might wear you out, especially on a rough day when you know things are not going as planned for an idea or funding or product or team and millions other things, right? So the one practical advice I will have is you know, to be curious and persevere, right? And if you are in your entrepreneurial journey just for money, this drive will die out pretty soon given the difficult path that lies ahead. So and you will stop the moment you hit a few bumps on the way. And believe me, there are going to be so many. So curiosity and perseverance, right? But more importantly, you have to connect to the problem at a fundamental level for it to be a sustained effort. Otherwise, it's not going to last long. And we know the success rate of startups, right? Again, the reasons are very different. In fact, I also say that if you are really doing a sane evaluation, logical evaluation, you will not do a startup, right? The only reason why you will do it is that, and should do it, that you are fundamentally driven to really make an impact. And what would be your motive? But it has to be really an idea that you believe in. And one more thing around this, you know, transition and making it easier for you is that if you have a family, make sure, you're married, right? I'm a single person, a story could be different. Make sure your family is on board with it. I mean, you're going to need a lot of their support. And knowing what I know now, I can't imagine doing a startup without a solid support from your partner. And you know what? Definitely, I'm the lucky one. I could not have expected more from my wife or my son in this journey. So the family support plays a very, very crucial role in this entrepreneurial journey. So these are some of the few points I would like to share if you want to be successful and survive in a startup world for your entrepreneurship.
Great. Those are great points, Satish. You know, I can relate to a lot of them on many levels, having gone through that same journey. You know, perseverance is definitely something that, you know, I agree with you. It's exciting in the beginning, you know, it's a new shiny toy. But when you hear, you know, rejection after rejection, when you try to sell something, that's when really the true character comes out if you're really in this. So that's, you know, some very good examples that you're providing there. Thank you for that. Take that a little bit further. When it comes to innovation, especially when, you know, you're a team of one, a team of just a few people, or whether you're leading a large enterprise team of hundreds of people, current times with COVID and everything in place, it's a little difficult to think about innovation. If we talk about like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, we're the lowest safety and, you know, those things, what people are concerned about these days. From your standpoint, what strategies or tools or methodologies that help you consistently come up with innovative ways to solve certain problems for your products and services? And how do you motivate your staff to operate in the same capacity?
Definitely. Very, very apt question. And especially, you know, as I said, COVID-19, when people are struggling to survive, how do and cope up with the current situation, how do you really keep the focus on innovation for the team?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the primary things I've always believed in that, listen to the customers and prospect intently to understand the real problem, not just what they are saying. You have to read in between line. I mean, an individual, when they are sharing their problem, or they, when they're stating their problem, it is always going to be from his or her role and their vantage, and their vantage point in the organization, which might not be the complete picture. So how do you take all in the consideration, and as you are listening to the your customer and prospect, make real sense out of it, right? So one of the key criteria here is that understand what they really mean, not really what they're saying. And everybody has their own life journey, and they will always have those aspects built in now, whether I can read that, understand it, and make a sense out of it to go after the problem. And in that process, I always believe that we have to think from a first principle approach, right? Not just what is being presented, what is being seen, but really ask yourself, you know, is this the problem definition, first of all? Solution comes later, right? Is it a problem definition that we are going after, and have we understood the problem correctly? And that really gives you a lot deeper insight to see that we are indeed solving the right problem. And you know, and I always believe that if problem definition is clear, you have half of the battle is solved, and rest half is just finding the right approach to do it. So this is about identifying how to innovate your next product or even process for that matter. And you know, if you can keep your team engaged in identifying the problem itself, believe me, it will become their problem as well, not just your problem. And that really excites the team and bring the kind of enthusiasm that you will not get otherwise. You can always find, hey, the problem, here is the solution, let's go ahead, do it. That is one approach. I will say it's not the most effective way to utilize the mind share of the entire team and their you know, their creativity, but rather engage them in identifying and defining the problem statement. And that will take you a long way. Keep the team excited, motivated. And you know, if it becomes their problem as well, they will be a lot more driven to solve it.
Yeah, most definitely. Those are great examples, Satish. And during my studies at Harvard, one of my favorite professors, Stefan Tomke, he specializes on the subject of innovation, and one of the key concepts through a lot of the case studies that we had explored during that time on that topic was all around experimentation as well. How a lot of companies succeed in really fostering that culture of innovation through that experimentation element, where you really provide the platform for your teams to be, you know, without any fear of repercussions or anything or judgment, to experiment, and no such thing as a bad idea when it comes to
exactly.
That. So those are great, you know, great concepts that you also shared. Thank you for that. When it comes to advanced technologies, RPA, AI, machine learning, and so forth, they're reinventing software engineering and kind of the information technology as a whole. How do you think these trends will impact kind of your industry from that innovation standpoint? And what are your thoughts on the best strategies to adopt such technologies? Because those are sexy terms. Everyone is talking about it. But when it comes to the actual implementation, I think it's a little bit of a different story. What's your take on that?
Definitely. Okay. So I know you mentioned some of the technology, RPA, AI, ML. So let me just pick one by one. So the notion of digital worker through RPA is already there. And for jobs that are repetitive in nature, can definitely be automated and will be automated actually. The advantage of a machine is that it can do a series of set things much faster and accurately than humans. So in practical sense, RPA will be assisting humans to do things faster and efficiently. And, you know, this COVID-19 has just accelerated the pace of adoption dramatically. But even for RPA, what processes that you want to automate, what is the data capture to even make sense out of it, is still challenging. And unless you find out the right set of process and data to automate, it won't work. It's just that if you pick a bad process and bad input data, it is going to do bad things much faster, right? So, and as you said, that the actual implementation stories are a little different because there is a lot of groundwork that need to happen to make sure that implementation indeed works out and automation behaves the way you wanted it to be. Now, when it comes to AI ML, it's working on vast amount of data. As vast amount of data is being gathered in the digital work to make sense and assist in our daily and professional life. So this adoption demand is only going to get bigger and stronger, right? Today in our life, as our life depends on so many devices, and most of them have underlying software using AL and using AI and ML solutions. So what I'll say that this is not going to slow down either. The only open question here is how do we adapt around it? How do we live with it and make sure that we are solving the right problem, because human are still going to be there. It's just that the machines and these AI ML will be assisting them in achieving those things faster and better. Now, coming to my industry, which is talent market, be it for talent acquisition and talent development in an organization, in the process of evaluating this individual competency, we are gathering a vast amount of data to analyze this individual competency and the outcome, right? So to give you more example, we are trying to mimic the real world evaluation or interview process as if the candidate is answering all the questions by sitting in front of the hiring manager. So all the rules of that situation is still applicable if the candidate is going through the glider evaluation process. So we use AI to bring this aspect alive so that candidate cannot maybe use unfair means to score high during the evaluation process. And you know, to ensure the integrity of the evaluation process, even though it's conducted by system in the remote setup, we can still make sure that the candidate submission is genuine, and all the evaluation and the underneath analysis that goes to figuring out who has the right skill to be able to do the job does require analyzing, processing a vast amount of data. And not only that, as we are processing that data, we are learning on top and making sure that next time we do a better job. And these are some of the things that these technologies have enabled us to do it. So my advice about this technology is that get on board early, wherever it makes sense in your business. Just don't do it because somebody else is doing. And even if you plan to do, there are a lot of groundwork that is needed. And unless you do that, I can almost assure you that it is bound to fail. And some of the actually data reflect that already. So that will be my take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a solid advice towards the end, especially, you know, you hear a lot and everyone is using it. It's a popular term, keyword, but really going back and defining what is the true need, what is the true strategy for us to utilize these technologies and how does that help us, you know, solve the problem that we're working for our clients. I think that's important. So I totally agree with you. And you guys being in this, you know, technical digital assessment space, I would imagine, you know, AI plays a big role in terms of, you know, really accounting for all different scenarios that could come into play when going through that assessment of the candidate or the whole interview process. So that's exciting. According to kind of one of the recent studies by McKinsey, and also Forbes did a publication recently, roughly 150 million professionals, probably even more by now, in U.S. have left that corporate environment, the corporate stable jobs, for more like independent consulting space. And knowledge intensive industries such as ours, you know, information technology, they're amongst one of the fastest growing segments of that gig economy, so to say. You've been in the space as well with, you know, helping companies, you know, streamline their assessment stages. How do you see this trend affecting the overall IT workforce?
I'm glad you brought this up because right now there is so much discussion about this workforce and the way to work at a company. So my take is that this new world is going to be awesome. Truly, I believe in that. It's a dramatic change, right? We have been working, sitting on the desk for a company a longer time, right? But the new world is going to be very, very different. And you know what? It has already opened up the global talent pool across the world, right? A person sitting out of a remote place in India or Africa is competing with a person in Silicon Valley just based on the merit. And with freelancing and the gig economy picking steam, it is going to be interesting how companies can still maintain security, trade secrets, compliance, etc., and still be there, be efficient. I do believe that not all types of work, even in IT, can be done through freelancing with the current infrastructure. It takes time to build trust, and it takes patience to build something meaningful and worthy. So the reliability and continuity of the work without long-term commitment does put projects at risk. I mean, system becomes so complex that exposing a standalone part to be completed by freelancer does pose a challenge. And hence, by the way, this is an opportunity as well. And maybe new solutions will emerge to be able to manage this fluid talent pool, freelancing, work completion, and still making sure that companies' goals, deadlines are being met. And you know what? Definitely the gig economy seems to be, seems to suit the lifestyle of millennials who do not want to commit too much to work. I mean, for them, they are looking at work as all part of their life and not the part of, and not the only part of their life, right? So, and if they are going to be the main part of the workforce pretty soon, they are the one who are going to define the working arrangements at corporates with maybe a new meaning. And I'm really hoping that a new solution will emerge to make it all happen in near future. So the IT world and IT workforce is an interesting area that is going through a lot of transition right now. And it's all for better, I will say.
Absolutely. And we're experiencing that hands-on with, you know, with our domain expertise being in IT staffing, how much that really benefits both, not only the candidates, but the clients as well. Being able to expand their, you know, their capabilities to target, you know, very niche skill set, and offering the opportunities to work remote. I think those are very exciting, you know, exciting things that we're going through right now.
Yeah, so on that, definitely the key part is that how can I find a way to develop a point solution or niche skill that I otherwise, either they're not available or maybe I can't afford, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I need something, point solution to get done. So how can I utilize that freelancing opportunity to achieve?
100%. 100%. And, you know, we at ProSource, what kind of we separate ourselves, so at least our aim to separate ourselves from other agencies or other companies, is that we bring on board, you know, the actual practitioners, you know, who have sat on the other side of the table, who've done the you know, the kind of the chaos engineering. So they know all of the intricacies of that process. And now they can translate that when they source, let's say, for site reliability engineer. So that's really kind of the focus. And even from my side, I've been on the other end of the table where I ran the IT divisions or even the project management offices. And it's easy for me to connect with potential candidates to really vet out their, you know, skill set. But I think what you guys bring to the table is of, you know, paramount importance, because you're able to provide that layer of additional, you know, that domain skill set to be able to evaluate these candidates. So that's, you know, that's very exciting.
Definitely.
So to talk a little bit further in terms of kind of that hiring and the interview process, which is very interesting to me, from your standpoint for Glider, when you hire for your teams, I would imagine you send them through Glider technology as well to go through the technical assessments. But aside from that, when the candidate interviews directly with you, tell us a little bit more how you handle these interviews. And do you get creative with them? You keep them traditional? And what do you look for in some of those responses?
Awesome. Great question. So, and you rightly said that the candidates do go through Glider evaluation process before they come to me. So, but by the time a candidate is presented to me, the team make sure that they have all the fundamental skills needed to do the job, using Glider, of course.
That way you can test actually if your technology works.
Exactly. I eat my own food, right? So, but beyond that, well, I have come to the realization that it is the curiosity or hunger and aspiration of individual that makes them shine in an organization. I typically try to ignore, you know, this know-it-all type of personality, because I don't believe in that. I always admire grit and ownership to take a challenge and bring it to fruition. So even if they fail, right, still that person is a winner for me than others who play safe. And these traits are important for me, right? I always use a phrase that someone is working hard, really hard, to keep the water calm at top, right? And I love those hardworking souls. The owner of the project explaining to me that, hey, there was this crisis, I took care of it, and I immediately point out, well, that crisis should not have been there to start with, right? So these traits are very important: curiosity, and high aspiration, and sense of ownership. So in interviews, the way I try to evaluate those traits is I tell them, hey, can you share your journey, be it personal or professional, through stories? And as they tell me stories, it reveals so much about them, right? If they can challenge the status quo in their stories, I like it, because they don't go by what they are told to do, but rather what they think makes sense. And if you can reason out with them to arrive at a meaningful conclusion, even better, right? And what I've realized that in the storytelling, you can't really try to be different, rather through a story, you the true personality have come out. And at various time, what I've seen is that people who maybe did not have opportunity to showcase some of their capability skills, but they are pretty good, and given a chance, they can actually shine. So the fundamental skills, to summarize, are really the being curious, being aspirational or driven, and having a sense of ownership. And on that note, yes, we are hiring marketing and sales people in the US, and I would love to talk to people who have these traits, or they believe they have those traits.
At least they claim, right? No, these are, you know, great examples. And one thing that I can add to that is, at least that's what I stick to when I interview for my teams, is kind of that statement that goes, it's better to ask for, you know, for forgiveness than for permission.
Yep.
It goes hand in hand with what you're talking about, someone really taking the initiative and really owning the problem or owning the project and getting things done. I think those are, you know, those are very hard to find skills in people.
I know. I know.
I truly believe that, you know, you can't teach personality. And if that you cannot sense that in the interview and you feel like, yeah, they may change down the road, it's usually, you know, very difficult to do. So I'm excited about some of the examples that you're providing, and it's, and you know, resonate well.
Definitely. And you know what, in my last 20 years of professional career, I have met so many smart people, so many intellectuals, right? I work with them as well. But I just wish that if they had that, if they don't play that safe, and if they had that driving that to try something and experiment with new things, they can go so far ahead. I just can't imagine, right? I mean, I've tried to push some of them in my connection, but really I see a big difference in, you know, knowledge, intellect versus being able to take this step and take risk. And deal with the outcome as well. It's very hard to cross that barrier.
Oh yeah. Yeah, those are very hard skills and, you know, hard to develop. And it's has a lot to do with some of the, you know, the types of personalities that you deal with. So that's very interesting. So Tish, last but not least, what are you currently reading? And if it's different from what are you currently reading, what is one book you always recommend to others and why?
So I'm glad you brought it up. So right now I'm totally amazed by this book, Competing Against Luck by Clayton Christensen. Unfortunately, he died in
January. Hey, that's a Harvard professor. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Amazing. And I mean, the couple of things that really struck chord with me is that, you know, the statement that says your product and solution is hired to do a job for your customer, right? So do not lose the sight of that at any point of time in the business. And this is a very profound statement, actually. And if you start looking at your product and solution from that lens, a lot of noise and fluff goes away. It clarifies who is your real competition. I'm so much amazed by the simplicity of the statement that it actually took to my heart and actually started looking at my own offering and actually did something with it as well. And it also pointed out that customers do not want products; they want solution to their problems. And that simplicity, it really is needed for you to, for the executives, to see where we are heading as an organization, right? So again, it reminds me, going back to the first principle approach, don't get riled up in your product and solution. Look at from the outcome perspective, right? Are you really solving the pain point of your customer and not just, you know, stuck in the features and this and that of your product and solution, right? So that is what I'm reading right now. I'm still, I think, halfway, but amazing book. And I think your later part, which book you recommend? I recommend this 0-1 by Peter Thiel. And amazing book, very radically different ideas to approach the problem, a contrarian view indeed. And truly the description of 1 and 0 really goes very well in my head. Which area to pick? Are you working some incremental solution? No, and he calls vertical and horizontal solution, right? And this product really, if any entrepreneur is planning to start something, I think they should read this book. Mm-hmm. It will really change their mind how do they approach and how should they attack the problems in the world.
Those are great recommendations, and for our listeners, we'll make them available in episode notes. And the other book that's, you know, very similar to Peter Thiel's, I'm pretty sure you read that, or by Ben Horowitz, The Hard Thing About the Hard Things.
Yes.
That's a similar book, and it's completely, you know, very outstanding. So just kind of to relate on that note. So Tisha, I know you're very busy. Thanks so much for finding time to talk to us today. I learned quite a bit through this short conversation. Let's stay in touch, and I look forward to do another episode with you in a couple of years.
Sure. Thank you very much, Jan, for the opportunity to talk to you. And it was very interesting to talk about all the things that you brought up. And I'm looking forward to be in touch with you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.